Tanisanne's Hamlet moment. Tanisanne emerged onto the platform at Kita Ikebukuro station and made her way over to the area between the benches and the vending machines. It was a lonely stretch of concrete with tracks on either side, and as it was now approaching midnight, there was no one else around. They had more sense. She'd arranged to meet up with some of her old friends from Wakeo University, and had ended up staying longer than intended. Nonetheless, she should still be in time for the last train, though at present the information board on her side was as blank as the face of a prima ballerina who's just been asked a particularly tricky question about local planning regulations. In short, there were no imminent arrivals. She delved into her shoulder bag for a photocopied sheet. It was at times like this that she was tempted to use the catmap, that secret network of shortcuts that could get her from here to there in the blink of an eye, were it not so fraught with unexpected pitfalls and tiger-based peril. On second thought, she reflected, probably best not to tempt fate, or rather to leave the fate tempting for another day when she was more inclined towards larks and jeopardy. So she folded the piece of paper and put it away. As she did so, there was the usual twanging of rails, signalling the approach of the southbound train on the other platform. However, something was ever so slightly off on this occasion, for she happened to catch sight of the arrivals board as a message flashed up in orange and green. It was probably an electronic glitch, yet for a fraction of a second she could have sworn that it read, "Elsewhere, 11:42." In the next instant, the train came thundering into the station, lights ablaze, yet not a living soul on board as far as she could tell. Subsequent events proved her to be only half right, for once it had come to a halt, the doors slid open and an ageing salaryman stepped out onto the platform at the far end, briefcase in hand. Tanisanne recognised him straight away, even from that distance. Yes, there could be no mistaking the stocky figure with the metal-framed spectacles and neatly trimmed moustache as being none other than her own dear dad. And while seeing him there, not to mention at that time of night, would have been a surprise under any circumstances, it was made even more so by the fact that he'd actually been dead for the last 20 years. The two of them came together under the station clock. "A Torsan," said Tanisanne, putting on an expression of slack-jawed bewilderment. "Why are you here?" "Well, it's not for the warm welcome, that's for sure," grumbled her father, a little put out by the less than enthusiastic greeting. "I'm here to see you, of course." "Me?" said Tanisanne. "What for?" At this, the late Mr. Tanny seemed to get quite flustered for some reason. "What for?" she asks, he echoed, clearly stalling. "I come all the way here from the mystical nether regions, and all she can ask me is what for? That's a fine thing to say to your own father. I'll tell you what for when I'm good and ready, young lady." Needless to say, it was a very long time since anyone had called Tanisanne that. "What for, indeed?" he continued to complain. "The barefaced audacity of it. Well, when the Spanish conquistadors landed in Mexico in 1519, did the Mayans ask them what for?" "No," said Tanisanne, "but they probably should have done." "Yes, all right, bad example," he admitted, "but you take my point. How's your mother, by the way?" he then inquired to get himself out of a corner. "Well," said Tanisanne, "the weak knees and grumbling cecum are much improved. If only we could say the same of the personality." "Quite," nodded her father, "and as we know, that's as likely a prospect as a charming Chinaman. A fine woman, nonetheless, even if she does have less sense of humour than a garden gate." This was true. Tanisanne Senior had no discernible sense of humour and did not understand jokes. All the same, that did not stop Tanisanne and her father from playing them on her. In some ways, it made it more fun. And while they had both enjoyed her look of alarm whenever she bent over, only to have one or the other of them rip a piece of paper to simulate the rending in twain of some overstretched undergarment, they were just as capable of turning the tables on each other, as when Tanisanne's father had asked Tanisanne to check his homework for his Wednesday evening English class. He'd been asked to construct sentences using the adverb always, as in, "The cherry blossoms always bloom in April." So he'd produced the sentence, "Mr. Smith always likes to wear a fresh red rose in his buttonhole." However, Danisan informed him that while this statement was grammatically correct, he had in fact made one small spelling mistake and advised him to change the word button to bottom, which was how he read it out to the rest of the class. It was because of this that her father had decided to take advantage of this brief reunion to exact a sort of post-mortem revenge. "Oh, I say," he remarked, sniffing the air, "can you smell that sweet fragrance? What is that, I wonder? Jasmine, perhaps?" So then Tanisan sniffed the air, only to recoil in the next instant, covering her nostrils with the sleeve of her jacket. "Oh, a torsan," she complained from behind the folds of material. "That is rank, even for a dead man." "Brings back sweet memories, though, doesn't it?" grinned her father, very pleased with his weapons-grade silent but deadly. "Remember the lift in Okinawa?" She did indeed, as did every one of the 11 passengers who'd been making their way down to the lobby of the Izaki Hotel on that fateful morning in August 1989. Only her father had enjoyed that long elevator ride down. He'd even winked at Tanisan from the back of the compartment. But this was no time for dwelling on farts, past or present, as the deceased Mr. Tanny had but a few minutes before the arrival of the next train, which would whisk him back off into the beyond. So after this initial preamble, he quickly got around to the actual reason for his being there. "Right," he said, "well, here it is, plain and simple. Once you've been sufficiently dead for a certain number of years, you're allowed one trip back to see how you're remembered. There are, however, a number of conditions attached to that. For one thing, you're not allowed to throw furniture around or give anyone the willies, which is why most of us don't bother to take the offer up, preferring instead to receive the equivalent value in book tokens. But as I've already got plenty of reading material to be going on with, I thought I'd pop back just to make sure that you and your mother hadn't forgotten me. Oh," he added, almost as an afterthought, "and the other thing is, I left some highly confidential business papers in the house, and I just wanted to find out what had become of them." Ah, now they were getting to it. "What papers?" asked Tanisan. "Well," said her dad, striving to maintain that breezy air of nonchalance, "as I say, they're these boring business papers, which I keep in a cabinet in the study. They be of no interest to you." Now, as soon as he mentioned the cabinet, Tanisan knew exactly what he was talking about. While she and her mother had been clearing out her father's study after the funeral, she'd been obliged to force the lock on said cabinet, whereupon a great avalanche of pornographic magazines had come tumbling out onto the floor. Not realising what they were, Tanisan Sr. had opened one out at the centrefold, but then just as quickly she threw it down with a look of horror. "Ugh!" she exclaimed. "Disgusting! Get rid of them!" Which it then became Tanisan's job to do. Strictly speaking, though, it was not her first encounter with her father's pornography collection, as she now recalled while conversing with his ghost on that lonely station platform. As a child, she'd once come across one of these disgusting magazines tucked away beneath the pages of the Japan Times, which he'd left lying about on his desk. So she'd spent the morning colouring in the pictures with her felt-tip pens and crayons, thinking it would be a nice surprise for him when he got home. Which it was. Time to have some fun with it again, thought Tanisan, for she was very much an advocate, if not the actual inventor, of the three T's. Taunting, teasing and tormenting. So with no further ado, she reached into her bag for her smartphone and began to dial a number. "What are you doing?" asked her father's spectre, clearly perturbed. "Calling Okasan," said Tanisan. "Why?" snapped the alarmed Mr. Tanny. "Well, why not?" said his daughter. "If anyone's going to know about these so-called papers of yours, she is. After all, it's her house now." "Yes, but there's no need to drag your mother into it," protested her father, who was starting to wish that he'd taken the book tokens after all. "And there's no harm in asking either," replied Tanisan. "Unless, of course, there's some special reason you want to keep her out of it. I'll just tell her that I've got your ghost here with me, and it's that wants to know. She'll understand. Even so, it's a bit late to be making phone calls. She'll be in bed." "Oh, I wouldn't worry about that," said Tanisan. "It's Friday night. She'll be watching Vile Crimes on the Lifestyle Channel." "Well, let her watch it then," retorted her father, who was starting to get upset. "Whoa, Otor-san, take it easy," said Tanisan. "You shouldn't get yourself so worked up. Think of your heart." "Oh, no, you don't have to." "Well, think of your peace of mind then." fat chance of that, a poor ghostified father was beginning to realise. Having made the mistake of broaching the subject of the cabinet in the first place, all he wanted to do now was to close the door on it. But his daughter was not about to let that happen. "I'll tell you what," she suggested. "If it means that you'll finally get to rest in peace, give me the details and I'll go over there tomorrow and look for them myself." "What do you mean?" asked her father. "The papers," said Tanisan. "Describe them to me, precisely. I'll go over to the house tomorrow and dig them out." "No, no, no, don't do that," said her father's spectre, shaking his head. "Well, tell me which cabinet it is and I'll have someone come over from your office." In saying thus, Tanisan had conjured up a scenario that was even worse than her father's most cringeworthy imaginings. "Oh, God, no," he begged. "Please don't do that." So then Tanisan attempted to portray absolute mystification at his refusal to accept any of the very reasonable and well-thought-out solutions that she suggested so far. "So, let me get this straight," she said, as she counted off the items on her fingers. "You don't want a Karsan to handle it, you don't want me to handle it, and you don't even want anyone from your office to handle it. So who exactly do you want to handle it? Mechagodzilla?" "Assuredly not," said her father, who to a very large extent was enjoying playing the role of the injured party in this conversation. "I think I can safely say without overmuch emphasis, the mechanical monsters with buzz saws for hands would in fact prove something of a liability when it comes to the handling of routine clerical paperwork. And I'll thank you not to be so facetious, missy. You get that from your mother. But at least tell me which cabinet it is." Here he hesitated. "Only if you promise not to do any of the things that you've suggested so far," he said. "Okay," she agreed. "I swear by the many nose hairs of St. Peter." "All right then," said her father. "It's the great metal cabinet with the lock on the front." At this, Tanisan frowned. "Well, are there two of them?" she asked. "No. Why do you ask?" "Because I opened a cabinet just like that," said Tanisan, "but it was full of dirty magazines." This bombshell occasioned an involuntary squeak on the part of her father, which Tanisan enjoyed immensely. Most people in that position would have gladly disappeared at that point, never to show their faces again. Yet the stubborn Mr. Tanny did nothing of the sort, which seems a little odd, since, presumably, as a ghost, he had that facility. "What?" he exclaimed, determined instead to defend the indefensible like some die-hard fan of country and western music. "That's impossible. How did they get there?" "Oh, yes, of course, it's obvious. It was your Uncle Daisuke playing one of his stupid jokes. Well, I must say, I find that in very poor taste. And when he finally gets to join us in the afterlife, which shouldn't be too long now if he carries on eating and drinking the way he does, I shall certainly be giving him a piece of my mind." "Oh, stop it, Father," Tanisan complained. "I've known all about your little hobby since I was a girl. Who do you think it was that coloured in those pictures in the September 1972 edition of Whoppers magazine? And I'm telling you that it was your uncle who put them there," the father maintained. "He must have sneaked into the house with a bag full of smut while we were watching fireworks." "Anyway," said Tanisan, "whoever it was, you'll be glad to know that I managed to get rid of the evidence. Although it wasn't easy, I can tell you. Successfully disposing of large quantities of pornography is only slightly less difficult than getting rid of a corpse. Believe me, I speak from experience." At this, her father's ghost shot her a sideways glance, as if he was suddenly seeing his daughter in a whole new light. "How do you mean?" he asked. "Well, they're similar situations, aren't they?" said Tanisan, pulling up the collar of her jacket. "What I mean to say is that if you find yourself in the position of having to get rid of a dead body, you can't just dump it outside with the rest of the recycling for all the world to see." "Well, no, of course not," her father was forced to concur. "That's not how we brought you up." "Quite. So I had to take special measures." Unsurprisingly, a strained silence lingered on. "So, this dead body," he then asked, "was it anyone I know? I think it's only right that I should be in full possession of the facts in case I happen to run into them on the other side. Could be embarrassing." "No, no," said Tanisan. "It wasn't human, even by Cousin Shunsuke's standard." "Not human?" "Of course not human," said Tanisan, appalled at the suggestion. "What do you take me for? It was a ginormous cockroach that had somehow found its way into the house. Insecticides had no effect, so I got it drunk and sent it over a cliff in a minivan." "Phew," said her dad. "That's all right then. You had me worried there for a minute." "And in any case," continued Tanisan, "we weren't talking about me, were we? we were talking about your vast collection of dirty magazines. At the time, I was highly tempted to burn them. But then just by chance, I happened to bump into an old colleague of yours, Nakamura-san. So I asked him for his advice. At this, her father gave a groan of despair. What? Oh, no, say it isn't true. Not blabbermouth Nakamura, the most indiscreet man in the 23 wards. He of the cheesy breath and that annoying habit of practising golf swings whenever he's talking to you. Yes, said Tani-san. Not big-mouth Nakamura, though, continued her father, still hoping against hope that it was some other Nakamura she was talking about. The treacherous, toupee-wearing motor-mouth of the 15th floor, gossip, flibbity-gibbet and rumour-monger supreme, known to all and sundry as the talking kumquat. Yes, yes, and I say again yes, repeated Tani-san. What did you expect me to do? I didn't ask for this problem, did I? It was dropped into my lap. At this, the pale grey ghost of the late Mr. Tani gave her a sharp look. What do you mean, dropped? He asked. Why dropped? Who did the dropping? Okaa-san, of course, said Tani-san, as if it should have been obvious to anyone with a cubic centimetre of brain. She was the one who told me to get rid of them in the first place, so that's what I did. On hearing this, her poor late father staggered back a step or two, his face assuming a look of absolute horror. Oh, God, this just keeps getting worse, he moaned. So not only does everyone I ever worked with know about them, but just in case we missed anyone, your mother does too. Yes, said Tani-san, but don't worry. I had a good idea. I realised that the best way of disarming the gossipers and the gloaters was by bringing it all out into the open so that they had nothing to gossip and gloat about. Just then, the tracks on the southbound side of the platform began to twang again, signalling the arrival of the next late-night special to elsewhere. "Whoa," said her father, realising that his time on Earth was rapidly running out. "What have you done? Tell me, quickly." "Nothing drastic," shrugged Tani-san, who, as you've probably guessed, was making it all up as she went along. "I called in a favour, that's all." At the time, Tani-san Industries was planning to build a new extension to the Oceanographic Institute at Nippon Kaiō University, so I asked the president to find a corner in the library to house your vast collection of gentlemen's reading materials. So now there it is for everyone to see, all properly catalogued and set out, next to a handsome portrait of you, looking every bit the man of letters. It even has your dates printed underneath. If you ever fancy a haunt, you'll find it sandwiched between the structural engineering section and European writers of the early 20th century. Just then, the phantom train came thundering into the station and drew to a halt behind them. With a ghostly hiss, the automatic doors slid open. Visibly stunned, Mr. Tani took a step back into the brightly lit interior, Tani-san's words only just starting to sink in. "Well, isn't that just marvellous?" he finally managed to say. "You do your best to lead a decent life, working hard to raise a family and bring life-saving pharmaceuticals to the general public. Yet just because of one tiny fault, one teensy-weensy character flaw, you're only ever remembered, if at all, as a dirty old man." With that, he gave a heartfelt sigh and shook his head. "Oh, don't be so melodramatic, Father," said Tani-san as she stood there waiting to see him off. "No one on this side remembers you like that." "Really?" said her father, who, in spite of all his whining and complaining, had actually enjoyed getting very upset. "Thank heavens for that." "Of course not," said Tani-san as the door slid shut. "They call you the Pawn King."